days ago while I was watching Monday Night Football. So, all right, well,
this has been
KBOL 90.7 FM Portland. I'm Miss Reagan here with
Simon
and Lennox
and Sage and Graham, who are not in the room, but they were here, and Rosemary and Theo in his presence. Yeah. Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
We want you to join us Saturday, September 28th from 2 to 5 p.m. for a special live broadcast during the Compassionate Living Festival, which runs from noon to 6 p.m. at Norse Hall in Portland. Tune in for our coverage featuring Brenda Davis, a world-renowned expert on plant-based nutrition, as she explains how this lifestyle can boost your energy, protect your heart, and enhance overall well-being. Plus, enjoy live cooking demos, explore vegan vendors, and experience the festival's focus on health and wellness. That's September 28th, 2 to 5 p.m., live on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to PDX Progressive Talk Radio, where progressive dialogue meets local action. Every fourth Wednesday of the month, join us for insights and solutions on critical issues impacting Oregon. Let's create change together. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Good evening, KBOO community. Thank you for joining PDX Progressive Talk Radio this evening. I'm Sherry Morish, and I am out of town this week, so the candidate showcase was pre-recorded earlier last week. I hope you all had an opportunity to watch or visit the DNC convention. If you did, what were your thoughts? Did the convention increase your positivity for prospects in November? Are you on board with Kamala? And what did you think of Tim Walz? Email me at pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com with some thoughts. So many things are happening all at once. I am looking forward to very real battles in November, and I have some insights to share during the next couple of months. So be sure to catch us on social, on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram for insights and commentary on what's to come. Until next month, thank you for listening, and let's get busy with our District 2 candidate showcase. I was honored to have 7 District 2 candidates show up for the Zoom event. Tonight, you'll hear from Debbie Kitchen, Christopher Olson, James Armstrong, Tiffany Penson, Jennifer Park, Alana Pertle-Guinney, and Marnie Glickman. Have a good time listening, and it's super insightful. And thank you for listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM or www.kboo.fm. My little question list here. And then, so James, let's start with you, sir. Please take a minute to introduce yourself and let us know why you're running.
All right. Thank you for having me. My name is James Armstrong. I'm a small business owner here in District 2. For any of your glasses-wearing radio listeners, you might know Albert Eye Care or Cathedral Eye Care. Or if your kids wear glasses, you might know iStrong Pediatric Eye Care. Those are the businesses that my wife and I co-founded. I'm also a forensic accountant. I do fraud investigation work. I've worked on some pretty big financial fraud cases across the country. And I've been a community leader with Alberta Main Street for 5 years. And with the St. John's Boosters more recently. And since tonight is the, when we're recording this, is the first night of the Democratic National Convention, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I'm a founding member of the Young Oregon Democrats of America. Yes, that is YODA, if you spell it out. And that was a long time ago, back when I didn't have so much gray in my beard, but that's part of my resume. And I am running to, like many of the excellent candidates in this district, I really want to bring solutions to the challenges in the city and try to move the city forward.
Oh, sorry. James, thank you. That was perfect. Maureen, you're next.
Thanks for having me. I'm Marnie Glickman, and I first moved here in 1992 and fell in love with Portland and adopted it as my home. I know things are hard for Portland now, Portlanders now. Housing's too expensive, everything's too expensive, and temperatures are rising due to climate change. I decided to run for Portland City Council because we need experienced progressive leadership in City Hall, leadership rooted in community, grounded in good government, empowered by our progressive values. I'm confident that our city will become a place that we are proud to call home. A place where everyone can work, live, and enjoy the outdoors together. I see a brighter future for Portland when we bring people together and work together for our future.
That's fabulous. Thank you, Marnie. Tiffany, you're up.
Let me take myself. Hi, my name is Tiffany Penson. I'm running for City Council District 2. I envision a Portland where people and businesses thrive, supported by transparent city policies and practices, creating opportunities for all of us. I was raised, born, rooted in Northeast Portland. I live in the house that I was raised in. My father had a barbershop on Union Avenue, which is now Martin Luther King Boulevard, and my mother worked her way up at Pacific Northwest Bell, retiring early and then becoming a realtor for Barbara Cecile Coldwell Banker. That barbershop was rooted in community. People came there, sitting, waiting, talked, shared stories, waiting for the perfect haircut. As all Portlanders, we were Trailblazer fans. I was the first Blazer ball girl. My parents instilled in me both the commitment to community and a sense of problem-solving urgency to get things done. If you see something, say something, and do something. I have plans to make Portland safe and livable, to house our neighbors, to strengthen our economy and ensure a skilled workforce, and to craft a city budget that is accessible and accountable. I'm focused on forging stronger, more inclusive communities, which I already do as the unelected Portland Community College board member in my district and in my role at the city as people and culture manager.
Thank you, Tiffany. That's perfect. I really appreciate your being here. Debbie, you're up.
Thank you. I'm Debbie Kitchen, and I'm running for Portland City Council. I grew up in a small town in Kansas, and I came to Portland to go to college. Well, I fell in love with Portland, and have lived here ever since for almost 50 years, including over 40 years in District 2. I've been a small business owner for the last 30 years, owning a remodeling company with my husband, and we feature green building techniques and energy efficiency in our projects. In my first career, I was a regional economist working to bring more energy efficiency and renewables to the electric utility industry. I'm running for council because I believe Portland has the potential for massive positive change. I served on the Charter Commission and want to bring that vision to life for a more representative, accessible, transparent, and responsive city government so that each and every Portlander can thrive in our beautiful city.
Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate you being here. Elena, is that right?
Hi, my name is Ilana Pertle-Ginney. I am running for city council because I still believe in Portland. We have amazing people in this city who are creating fantastic things, organizing their communities and their schools, working hard every day to make ends meet. And I have heard from too many Portlanders as I am out canvassing and at events and in community who feel like they are doing that in spite of leadership at the city. And I think that with strong, forward-looking leadership at our city, really thinking about not just how do we address the challenges we face today, but how do we do that in a way that builds the city we want to live in 20 years from now, we could help people in our city do amazing things. I spent the first part of my career as an advocate. I worked with labor unions, teaching working people how to advocate for change in their communities. I spent the second part of my career working for two Oregon governors, briefly for Governor Kitzhaber and for 6.5 years for Governor Brown. I know how to make good, solid change through government systems. I know how to bring people together and build coalitions. My work is rooted in community, but it also has worked its way through our systems of government. And what I think we need right now in City Hall are people who can bring our communities together, help people believe in our city again, and then get to work actually making progress for people, getting things done so that folks are having it a little bit easier in their daily lives. I'm focusing my campaign around three issues: affordability, livability, and how we can make sure with this new system we have a really responsive, effective government. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you, Alina. I'm going to get your two names right. So thank you, Alina. I appreciate you being here. Jennifer, you're up.
Hello. My name is Jennifer Park. I use she, they pronouns. I'm a candidate for Portland City Council in District 2, North and Inner Northeast Portland. I have spent my entire career working in the public-serving nonprofit space, including 6 years in nonprofit supportive housing, working with chronically homeless adults with acute mental and behavioral health needs, and 5 years supporting students who struggle in our institutionalized public school system. I am running to address the systemic issues and inequities that cause the symptoms I've spent my life trying to heal. I have been studying and am now getting my master's in public administration so that I can be an effective council member in our new legislative form of city council with not only big ideas, but the skills to successfully implement them as well.
Thank you so much for your clear, concise, and effective introduction. Chris, it's your turn.
Yeah, thanks, Sherry. Thanks for having me. My name is Chris Olson, and I'm running for Portland City Council District 2. And I'm running because, like many people, I'm frustrated with how our city government ignores the needs of everyday Portlanders. I believe it's time to have responsive and empathetic representatives on city council that understands those needs. I'm a renter, and I'm a democratic socialist. I'm an activist and community organizer, and I've worked in the nonprofit sector for over a decade and spent 4.5 of those years in the inner city of Chicago. I've just always been on the ground working with everyday people. I'm also the youngest candidate in the District 2 race at 33 years old, which is shocking. And I believe that my experiences put me in a unique position to understand the concerns of my generation and those coming after me, and particularly those who are concerned about the climate crisis and the affordability issues in the city.
That's incredible. Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate all of you being here. So now it's the nitty-gritty. We're getting into the questions, and we'll start with James, since he's the first one I can see. And so, James, Portland has been grappling with significant homeless crisis. What policies and initiatives would you propose to support to provide immediate relief for those experiencing homelessness? And it doesn't have to be how's everybody now, just an overview of ideas in 30 seconds.
No, it's interesting you say that, because I feel like when I saw the word immediate, it was unique, because I feel like when we talk about this question, usually we talk about the long term. And so it was actually kind of a nice thought exercise to think about the immediate. So one thing I want to focus on that came to my mind was the vacancy rate and the leverage that the city has with our buying power. You know, we don't talk a lot about what the city can do and step in. We do a lot of outsourcing. We do a lot of trying to incentivize landlords to do the right thing. But the city has a lot of power. I look at what the nonprofit Do Good Multnomah is doing right now in Kenton. They're actually purchasing a motel, and they're going to house veterans in it pretty quickly. And basically, if they can buy one, we can buy 10. We can do that pretty quickly. So that's where my mind went with this question. I appreciate it. It was a fun exercise.
What a great answer. Thank you so much. And I'm going to switch things up a little bit because we have a fewer people on the line. I'm giving you all 45 seconds. That's about what you took. So I'm giving everybody 45 seconds to answer these questions, and that should help us run through the hour. Marnie, your turn.
You're muted, girl.
I'm unmuted. You know, the number one predictor of homelessness is housing pricing. On the city council, I'm going to be laser focused on developing deeply affordable housing with supportive services for people who make less than 30% of the average median income. That's not immediate, but these questions, the deep solutions, aren't immediate. You know, I was visiting with the Street Books Library in Northwest Portland a couple weeks ago, and I met this fellow, Jerry, and it took him 6 years to find a place to move into with supportive services, and that's way too long. I think we can do better when we're working together in City Hall.
I agree completely. Thank you. Great answers. Tiffany, it's your turn.
Hi. So first of all, the city and county can just do better in coordinating the resources to reduce houselessness and substance abuse and mental health needs. The county really takes care of the people, and the city takes care of the infrastructure. So jointly, there's a role there. I feel like the things that I would focus on is ensuring that there is shelter, temporary housing, enough of it, and then we move into affordable housing, because the people that are out there currently, a lot of them are not ready for affordable housing. When I think of the things that I would work on immediately, besides those meeting people where they're at right now, is I think about the working poor. I think about some of my professors and stuff that work at PCC and that are just working poor. And how do we create the supports around them? That's affordable housing. So they're not worrying, am I going to be paying? Am I going to be in my house? Am I going to be out of my house? I think of the fastest moving demographic, which is folks that are retired and on a fixed income. Those folks have worked all their lives now to wonder if they can afford to stay in or live in their places. So when I think of that, I think about working with state legislation and our partners to create like low barrier vouchers to help with that, to pour into also nonprofits that provide wraparound services versus funds to pay for your utilities and things of that nature. So that is my larger focus. My immediate focus is to ensure that the people, we are meeting the people where they're at with this temporary shelter.
I'm sorry, I have to cut you off. You have some awesome ideas, and I need to talk to you, especially if I need to talk to you. So, okay. Debbie, you're up next.
Great, thank you. Debbie Kitchen again. So the long-term solution to homelessness is abundant housing, and we need to increase our zoning capacity for housing. But for the short-term needs, I think the thing that we can focus on is preventative activities, such as, well, vouchers and rent assistance to help people from becoming homeless and experiencing that trauma and the cascading bad things that happen after somebody does become homeless. We need better eviction prevention programs that kick in before people are at right on the doorstep of eviction. They need to be able to access the services sooner. We've shown that the pod villages or the converted hotels actually work a little better because people have their own space. It's less traumatic than the group shelters. So I would double down on those. And I agree with what Tiffany said about meeting people where they are. We need a continuum of shelter options because there's families, there's people who need to be in recovery. There's just a variety of needs among the homeless people. So let's help them where they are and provide those supportive services and wraparound services.
Thank you, Debbie. To be a fly on the room in the room when you all get together and figure this stuff out when you guys get elected, I'm so excited. I wish I could be there. Alina, it's your turn.
Thanks so much, Sherry. So you asked about immediate relief. And when I think about immediate relief, there's three things that I want to do. The first two specifically are for our currently houseless population. And that is, we need to make sure that every person who's on the street providing supports to our houseless neighbors can actually offer resources that are available right now. That's something that I know the city and county have been working toward, but it has been a long time coming. And because the city does at this point have some of our infrastructure for shelter, it does need to be a joint effort. So I would say tomorrow, what needs to happen to get that online, like within a week or two, so that if you are talking to somebody, if you are houseless and talking to somebody who is offering services, they can actually direct you to available services right then. The second thing I would do is make sure that we have beds available every night for folks who are ready to enter recovery. Certainly not all of our houseless population is houseless because they're struggling with substance use disorder, but a portion of our currently houseless population is. And until we have enough treatment beds that are available when somebody is ready for treatment, we're not going to be able to help that portion of the population. We need to again say tomorrow, what would it take to get more beds online as soon as possible? Can you offer that sort of shelter through our hotels? As James was talking about, what do we need to do to get that up and running? And the third thing I would do is a preventative measure. We need to be doing more to prevent people from becoming houseless. When folks are right on the edge of housing instability, when they are about to miss that last rent payment that's going to kick them out of their housing, we need to be doing a better job coordinating between the city, county, metro, and the state to make sure that we have more funds available. It's much easier to keep somebody housed than to get them rehoused.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Alina. Great answer. Jennifer, you're next.
Thank you. Yeah. So to the question of specific initiatives to provide immediate relief, what I was thinking about, it's something that I've talked a lot about. I talked at a Housing Oregon meet and greet about it with some people who are really in the industry. Aligns a lot with something that Alana said, but it's really something we can implement rather quickly and have a huge impact. It's investing in bringing online the technological infrastructure to simply be able to find an open shelter bed that actually meets an individual's needs. So right now, you have to pick up the phone and call each individual organization or location and say, hey, do you have a bed tonight? do you have a bed tonight? We should have a system in place where you can say, I need a bed tonight for a houseless senior with a disability, or a couple, or an individual with a service animal, and know in real time what is available and where it is, so that we can get people placed. And that's not just city and county, that's a network of all of our incredible nonprofit organizations as well. And then we also need to make changes to Portland's street response so that they have the ability to transport individuals to available and appropriate shelter or treatment beds.
Thank you, Jennifer. You have come up or have an idea for a vast database that will update in real time. And that is a one, as a previous database developer, that's a huge initiative. But man, that's awesome. That is all of you have great ideas, but that is a central piece that I would love for you guys to bring that to the mayor and the city and see if there's RFQs that can go out to find people qualified to do that. Anyway, let's go on. Chris, it's your turn.
Yeah, thanks again. Let me preface this conversation, as you're going to hear me mention a couple times what I call my Pro Portland plan, which is a 12-point plan to do things that would, I think, help everyday Portlanders right now, because I'm tired of promises and we need to have a plan. So you'll hear me mention that a few times, but my plan does prioritize immediate action to get people housed, to bridge the gap until we can find more midterm and long-term solutions. So what I do is what I call I want to stop the sweeps, because we've spent $22 million over the last 4.5 years to keep people unhoused, essentially. The sweeps do nothing to resolve the issue, and out of sight and out of mind doesn't solve the problem. So I'll push to use those funds to open emergency nighttime shelters throughout the city. That can be done with the mayor declaring a state of emergency, and we can get as many people off the streets that we can in months, not years. A hotel and motel plans are great and absolutely needed, but that'll take 1 to 2 years to probably get those up and running. The last thing I'll do is I will work to pass my Renter's Bill of Rights, which is meant to help to keep people in their homes. I've signed on to it, so as Jennifer Park has signed on to it as well, and you can check that out at pdxrenterpower.com.
I'll have to make note of that. I need to update all my show pages, so the information in here will come up on the page when it's deployed. Okay, James, are you ready for the next question?
Sherry, I'm ready for you to be my full-time hype person. You say the kindest things after everybody talks.
Fabulous. Oh my goodness. Each group has just been, I'm so inspired with all of the ideas here.
I wish you were at every door that I knocked.
Well, no, we need counselors like you guys. That's the whole point of having this new governance system. You guys are going to be fabulous. Mental health. Access to mental health services remains a critical issue in Portland, particularly among the homeless population. And you guys have touched on some of these resolutions. How do you plan on to enhance the availability and quality of mental health services? And that's where I'll leave that. If you wish to expand, please do.
Thank you. Some of the other candidates might have heard me talk about this on the trail or at some of the other events. You know, I feel strongly that Portland needs to invest in a little bit bigger picture of an idea. I'd like to see us revisit what is kind of considered the Haven for Hope model that San Antonio has. It's essentially a campus style support system. So you bring in various types of shelter. You have low barrier, you have high barrier, you have family, you have LGBT, even in San Antonio, Texas. You have dog kennels, you have access to food, you have access to children's care, and then you also have primary health care and drug and detox right there. And what they do is, you know, they're reaching the scope of the problem. So they're able to see roughly 10,000 people per year at a budget of under $30 million, which when you compare that to some of the money that Portland's spending is pretty significant. So I put a kind of one plan out there. I think that, you know, the Delta Park Expo Center area, other people looked at this. I'm not the first one to come up with this idea, but I want to go big. I want to try to solve this problem, because I don't think it's a short-term problem. I think we need to invest in it.
Yeah. Oh, no, this is long-term. Long-term, definitely. Marnie.
Well, this is a really big topic for 45 seconds, so I'll just mention two ideas. One is that we need to work with Multnomah County and the commissioners and the Joint Office on Homeless Services to provide better mental health care for folks. And we do not need a messy divorce from the Joint Office. So I'm referring to a recent vote by the City Council where Renee Gonzalez and one of our opponents in this race, Dan Ryan, supported what's essentially Brexit, a messy divorce with the county. We do not have time for such shenanigans. We need to work together and grow up. A second idea I want to share is that we need to prevent trauma-induced mental health care problems. One, that means keeping people housed. And two, that means continued funding for the good city programs that are working on violence prevention. I'm a strong advocate for gun violence prevention, and that's why I've been a Moms Demand Action volunteer. And I'm the only candidate in this particular race that was endorsed by Everytown for gun safety. And I'm also got the Moms Demand Action seal, but I'm working with prevention advocates in District 2 and really across the state.
Thank you so much, Marnie. Tiffany, you're up.
So when we think about addressing mental health, again, when we think about who is responsible for what, county's responsible for the people, the city for the infrastructure. But let me tell you, over the past maybe... time is flying so fast, maybe 3 to 4 or 5 years, the county and the city have not effectively collaborated and worked together. And so I understand the city. I'm the only one here that actually understands the operation because I've worked in the operation for over 20 years. And I do remember when the communication was better, right? And so as elected officials, you have, your responsibility is to communicate effectively across all regions with our partners to solve for these issues. When we think about mental health, we simply don't have the infrastructure developed and built. We just need more of it. We're seeing, it's like a health crisis to me, a health epidemic. And so we do need to focus at the same times. It's both in building that infrastructure and making sure that we're supporting organizations and people that already do this work in a real tangible way to meet the needs. But it's both in. We've got to be doing this stuff together in unison. We can't say, oh, we wait till they get housing to do this, or we wait until they get services to get housing. It's both in, and we can do both in.
Walk and chew gum at the same time, right?
Exactly. Thank you.
Debbie, you're up. Thank you for your answer.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm loving all these answers from everyone. It's such a great group running for office. Very inspiring. So I'm going to focus on what others have talked about, both Marnie and Tiffany and others, about collaboration with our partners, Multnomah County. I'm also going to emphasize state and federal. We need to work with all of our partners to get more funding for this. It's been neglected for many, many years. And I think we really are seeing the results of the pandemic, and at every level, in our schools, in our community, on the streets, everywhere. I would also say we need to fund Portland Street Response full time, 24/7. Because that is the first response for mental health crises that are happening on the street. And if we do that, we can qualify for Medicaid funding. So that's a way to bring in more funding to help with that service. And then we need to work with outreach workers so that people can be approached in a trauma-informed way and be able to be connected to services. It's often a very difficult thing. I mean, I've experienced this with family members where the people who need the help most sometimes are not accepting it. And so you need that really well-trained, trauma-informed care provider who can help people connect to the services that they need.
Thank you, Debbie. Fabulous. Alana, did I get it right that time?
That was so good. Yes, okay. Thank you.
I'm writing them down how it's supposed to be said. So anyway,
I don't make it easy.
It's your turn.
Thank you. So mental health services is a place where this finger pointing between the city, the county, and the state has been probably the worst. And all of that happens at the expense of folks who need services, family members of people who need services who are left without the support that they need, and our community as a whole. So it's time, first of all, to start the finger pointing. I have had countless jobs where it was my role to figure out how to bring people together who don't see eye to eye and figure out how to find a path forward that everyone can be on board with. And that's what we need to be doing here around mental health services. I do think, along with just more and working together better, there are some holes in the system. I've talked to a number of folks who have family members who have acute mental health crisis from time to time. And what they tell me is that when their family member goes into crisis or is about to go into crisis, but isn't there yet, there's no services to help stop them from going into crisis. You have your regular weekly appointment. If you go into crisis, you can go to a hospital. But we also need a place where when you can tell or your family can tell that you're close to crisis, you can get the help you need to get back on board. Because again, prevention, much easier than dealing with the aftermath of somebody going into crisis.
For sure, for sure. Thank you, Alana. Jennifer.
Yeah, well, first I just have to say, Marnie, shenanigans is literally my favorite word. And you had me at shenanigans. Debbie, yes, yes, yes to fully funding Portland Street Response 24/7. You will hear me again and again and again point out that once they operate 24/7, we can actually bill Medicaid for their services and bring federal funding into our city. Why are we not doing that yet? But this is exactly the type of thing that I'm talking about. When you look at my platform, you see my values, and effective service networks is one of those. We have so much incredible work going on in our community at health and community-based organizations in the mental and behavioral health space. And the city can take a role in really scaffolding that and making it easier on everyone. Right now, it is so difficult to find services and access services, even for our overburdened providers, that our neighbors who need access. I say it as a joke, but the amount of executive functioning it takes to get support with executive functioning is crazy. So the city really needs to take a hand in just making it easier for everyone.
Thank you, Jennifer. Chris, you're up.
Well, I'll just continue to toot this horn, which is that my ProPortland plan does prioritize the Portland Street Response as our number one program that we need to provide mental health services to our unhoused population. We need to expand PSR because it is a nonviolent response to the unhoused and those going through a mental health crisis. And moving it to 24/7, I believe, is an estimated cost of about $14 million, which of course some of that would be able to be reimbursed through Medicaid, as mentioned. Plus, we can save money on police overtime with PSR responding to these calls instead of cops. So it's really a no-brainer. It's just been political shenanigans in a bad way that has prevented this from happening. And also just say that with my emergency temporary shelters, I want to use them as an entry point to connect people with mental health and addiction services. And on top of that, as other people have said, I will advocate for stronger partnerships between the city, the county, the state, local nonprofits, and healthcare providers to make sure that we streamline these services to people to ensure that no one falls through the cracks.
Thank you, Chris. All of you, again, my goodness, where have you been all our lives? So we're moving on to the last one, revitalizing Portland. Revitalizing Portland's economy and urban environment is essential for the city's future. What measures would you implement to stimulate economic recovery and development, support small businesses, and attract new investment into the area while still being equitable across the plain? That's a huge load. And so just something, 45 seconds, that an idea that you might have.
Yeah, thank you. I like to separate this into kind of two sections, basically the central city downtown and then our small retail districts. You know, like in District 2, we've got Williams, Broadway, Alberta, St. John's, those type of areas. So I disagree with some of the decisions that have been made around revitalizing Central City. I look at myself, I don't think a tax incentive for my city taxes is going to make me expand my business at this point anywhere. It's demand. You need demand for your services if you're going to expand your business. And we just need to address the things that we've been talking about in questions one and two, which will increase livability. It'll get people back downtown and you'll see those businesses thrive. Moving into the small business districts, I think that's where I really want to see more local community support, similar to the district manager program we have in St. John's. I think too often we spend our money kind of at the high level with Prosper Portland, and I'd like to see those dollars flowing down closer to the small businesses where individuals actually know who needs the access to funds and how they can best be used.
Perfect. Thank you, James. You bring up a lot of good issues and things that the city should now be looking at and obviously is not. Marnie, it's your turn.
Thanks. To revitalize the city, we really need to look to community members. And in District 2, we are looking to Black Portlanders to revitalize the district. So we have two examples, right? So Laura Albina is a 94-acre area in Northeast Portland that stretches from the Willamette River to I-5 and includes the neighborhoods of Elliott, Boyce, King, Humboldt, Overlook, and Albina Vision Trust is the most transformational urban redevelopment project in the nation, and is led by Black Portlanders. And we need city leaders who are going to fight for this project to come to completion and be ambassadors for the folks of Albina and make sure that this can happen on time. And I'm gonna give another District 2 example. Donovan Scribes and the Kids Outside have secured a $4 million in public-private dollars to redevelop the George Park alongside Portland Parks and Rec and the Portland Parks Foundation. And this two-acre park has been suffering from crummy infrastructure. And so this is another example of District 2 residents making a big difference and making public-private partnerships. And I want to be one of 12 city council members who helps Portlanders do that.
Perfect. Thank you. Nice drive on that one. Tiffany.
And when we think about the revitalizing Portland, we have to think about the basics. We need to get back to delivering on basic services. We must focus on cleaning and clearing rights-of-ways, removing trash, garbage, graffiti, and keeping our business districts and neighborhoods safe. A safe city also means a 911 system that is properly trained and staffed. Response times to our both non-emergency calls and emergency call responses. A thriving economy demands that we have a safe city, a strong workforce, a streamlined processes to do business in our city, so quick permitting processes and things of that nature. As the city, I currently work with the problem solvers to fast track these problems through the team. It is producing real results. So one of the things that I would do is expand that. Currently, people jump on a call, they say, and they're in the business district, what they need, and we cut through the red tape, we get out there, we clean it up, because we know we have to make sure people can do business in our city. To thrive, our businesses need the ability to meet the requirements of doing business in our city quickly and efficiently. I work to add small business liaisons back to the city to help new and expanding businesses move through city requirements. I also currently, in the roles that I've done at the city, I created the first supplier diversity officer working with minority women, emerging small businesses, and veteran-owned businesses, providing them opportunities to business technical assistance and access to city contracts. So this is my wheelhouse. I've done multiple things at the city and created things that serve the city citywide. And so that's really what sets me apart, is I understand and I've done the work.
It must be super interesting. I'm going to take a minute here. Okay. It must be super interesting to be a city employee with a 20-year tenure running for city council. It's like you have insights that none of the rest of us could even imagine.
Oh yeah. And so it is interesting, but I also think it's great to have fresh people running, but it is interesting. And I've done the work. I have a lot of things under my belt, and it is interesting, like the balance too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have to go, but thank you. Debbie, you're...
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Well, I've been a small business champion for years, working with the city, working with organizations such as the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs and Central East Side Industrial Council, just to provide some of those services, such as the technical assistance, the access to funding. We had an access to capital roundtable group that brought together funders so that they could communicate with each other and be able to refer people better. I also support kind of a concierge service in the city for small businesses so they can work through the red tape. We need to look at our regulations. Sometimes they just conflict with each other between bureaus. We need regulations that make sense, that, you know, achieve the things we want to achieve, but don't just slow down things and prevent good things from happening. And then I think the things that make life good for all Portlanders make it good for visitors, you know, things like arts and culture. We can double down on our makers tradition. We have creative, innovative people and companies and designers and in so many fields. And so I think just supporting those and publicizing those and providing that platform for those groups to shine. And that's what makes Portland so interesting, our, you know, having this vitality in our food and beverage and in our shops in the neighborhood business districts. It all makes neighborhoods that we feel comfortable in, and that people can have that variety and innovation and fun to make it worth living here.
Thank you, Debbie. Alana, it's your turn.
So, you know, I'm going to go in a different direction than I thought I was, because we've heard some great answers about direct support to small businesses. But I want to go back to something James said. And when we have a small business owner here with us today saying that what would drive his expansion in our city is demand, I think we need to listen to that. And demand comes from higher wages. So what would I do to revitalize Portland's economy? I would ask if we're doing everything we can through our economic development programs to support businesses that are paying a living wage in our city. Because unless people in our city are making a living wage, they can't support the amazing small businesses that make each of our individual business districts so unique and so fantastic and the type of place that folks like to go. And while tourism is fantastic and an important part of our economy, those businesses need their regular customers that they can count on to meet their baseline bills as well. And those customers need a good paycheck that they can count on to be able to do that.
For sure. For sure. Thank you. All excellent points. Jennifer.
Yeah, mine aligns pretty closely with Alana's. Housing affordability. Housing affordability directly relates to people's ability to invest their paychecks in our communities. People who have their basic needs met can go out and enjoy the amazing things our communities offer, enjoying fun family activities, eating out at our amazing restaurants, my favorite breweries with play spaces for my kids. But housing affordability is about equity and inclusion and is really what drives people's ability to participate in what we have going on out in the community. And to Chris mentioned earlier that he and I have both supported the Renters Bill of Rights that the Democratic Socialists have put out. That includes a measure to consider ways that we can link housing affordability to the minimum wage. Rep. Mark Gamba has ideas around making a houseable wage. We are at the mercy of the state for minimum wage adjustments, but we can be a lobby at the state. We can have a partnership at the state, and we can come up with really creative ways to make sure that anyone who lives here can afford to live here and still participate in our community and be a member of stimulating our economic recovery.
Fabulous, fabulous. Chris, you're next.
Thank you. Yeah, so many good ideas. It was hard to like, where do I have to pivot to like try to have something a little more interesting? But I think one thing that hasn't been addressed really is our infrastructure and how much of our cities, you know, our businesses depend on our infrastructure, and that we have something of like a $4.4 billion backlog on road maintenance here in the city, which I know like personally that that can be difficult and challenging for our businesses to have like a high quality city that they want to bring, that they want to build their business in and have their customers go to. And we need to absolutely continue to deal with this backlog and fund these infrastructure projects would create good union paying jobs. And I would want to do that. On top of that, I've in my Purple Portland plan, I have what's called an urban trail network, which is protected pedestrian and bike lanes throughout the city that are connected. But that does have an impact on local businesses, because if the more you walk and the more you bike somewhere, the more likely you are to stop at a local business and patronize them and give them your funds. So I've done that. I've seen that personally in my life. I became a more active biker back in January and just have been biking around the city most of the time. I started in January, which most people be like, that's the worst time to start biking. And I loved it. And now it's like, it's summer. I'm like, oh, this is incredible. I thought it was great back then. But you're going to be able to bike and walk and spend more time patronizing local businesses if you have the right infrastructure in place.
And absolutely. And I'm a Lyft driver on the side in between projects, and all the obstacles, right? All you too? Very good. All the obstacles that are in the roadway now.
In both San Francisco and in Portland, I've been a Lyft driver. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah. Hopefully if this opportunity comes through, I can quit soon. But anyway, I don't mind doing it now and then, but the obstacles, I was in North Portland just earlier today, in St. John's, in fact, and the obstacles in the roadway definitely make you more aware of who is around you and what they're doing. And because you're having to look at so many things all at once. We are at our time. I want to thank each and every one of you. Oh, we have one more thing to do. We have 1 minute for you to tell me or tell your audience, your constituents, why they should vote for you. So I totally forgot about that until just now. Let's do that. So we'll start with James. You have 1 minute, sir.
Okay, thank you. Well, in the words of our fantastic host, Sherry, as you can tell, all the other candidates in this district are amazing. I think it's pretty clear the District 2 has, in my opinion, the best candidates. And this is only a third of them. So it's pretty impressive. When I look at what makes me different, you know, we're moving to a representative system with the districts. And I think it's really important that this new council has diversification of skill sets, backgrounds, and what you're bringing to the council. And I think when you look at my small business ownership and the fact that my businesses are spread across the district from Alberta to St. John's, I really do spend a lot of time basically in this district, my entire day, night, every other time. So I think that's something that makes me unique, but as you can see, we have some fantastic candidates and I'm just excited to be part of this.
We're excited to have you. The people in District 2, you are have an embarrassing amount of creative and innovative and awesomely audacious people that they can choose from. Marnie.
1 minute. Vote for me in District 2. I'm experienced. I'm a former school board member. I know how to read laws and make laws. I was a graduate of Lewis and Clark Law School. And I've worked for 30 years as a public advocate for justice and democracy in the planet. I've got political courage. I'm a black belt martial artist, and I live with multiple sclerosis, and I raised 3 kids in the pandemic. I'm pro-youth, I'm pro-elders, and I'm pro-working families. And Portlanders work hard, and I want the city to work hard for Portlanders. You know, we need leaders who can bring people together, because we're doing things in hard times, and I'm humble enough to tell you I cannot do this alone. We have to get everyone involved, and we're not going to agree on everything along the way, But when the going gets tough, I'm going to bring people together, hold our community together, and be respectful. And you can count on me to keep showing up and fighting for all Portlanders. Thank you for having me, KBOO.
Thank you, Marnie. Tiffany, it's your...
Hello, thank you for this opportunity, Sherry. Again, my name is Tiffany Penson, and what sets me apart and makes me different, the voters have already elected me twice as the Portland Community College School Board. So I'm experienced in what a legislative body looks like, because that is the type of body that we had, where you are responsible for setting policy, budget, and holding the city administrator and mayor accountable for operationalizing those policies and budget. I am born, raised, and rooted here. I know my community. I live in the house that I grew up in. I also have set policy within the city that serves our folks. When we think about community-based organizations and showing up community, I already naturally do that. I'm just not starting to do that. So I am Northeast Portland, and I would be honored to have your support and vote. Visit TiffanyForPDX.com. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Tiffany. Oh, sorry, Debbie, you're up.
All right, thank you. Again, I'm Debbie Kitchen, and I'm excited to be part of this change in government and look forward to making this a better city that functions better for every Portlander. So the reason that you should vote for me is that I'm a housing champion, I'm a small business champion, I've been working in the green energy field for many years, and I just want to bring those skills, working together across boundaries, across differences, bringing those skills to collaborate and work together with everyone in Portland and all different points of view. I've done this for a number of years, both in community and bringing together environmental groups, the business community, stakeholders from neighborhoods, and work together to forge, you know, a common ground, find those common values that we all share. So many people we love Portland. I run into this every day as I'm working in the in this election, and we just need to work together and find people who can collaborate to bring a better Portland together.
Thank you, Debbie. Alana, it is your turn.
Thanks so much. And Sherry, I really want to start by just appreciating you bringing us all together today. When we do these, sometimes the questions, the flow isn't great, and you've asked us things that have really brought out a lot of important, tangible things that we can do when we're in office. So thank you. At the end of the day, we are implementing a whole new system of government, and we need people on council who know how to do that. We need people who understand what it means to write the rules that this council will operate under, because we don't have a template to draw from. We need people who have actually written public budgets, because as I understand it, about a month after taking office, we're going to start to get budget proposals from bureaus, and it's going to be a cuts budget. We are not going to have extra money to throw around. We need people who know how to work within county, state, metro, federal systems. When I was in the governor's office, I was the governor's legislative director for a time, working directly between the legislature and the executive branch, and working directly with our local governments and our federal delegation at times as well. I'm rooted in progressive values. I come out of the labor movement. I was an advocate for many years, but I also have the experience to make sure that we get this right and to reach out to Portlanders, make sure we're bringing your concerns in and actually getting results with the policies that we put in place.
Thank you, Alana. Very nice. Jennifer.
Thank you so, so much, Sherry. Thank you for having us all on PDX Progressive Talk Radio today. I am Jennifer Park. You can find out more about me on my website at persistwithpark.com. And in addition to the priorities I've talked about today, I outline my values. I think it is critical that the new city council lays a foundation of values-based governance, equitable community engagement, effective service networks, human-centered policies, The reason I am running this cycle specifically is to help lay that foundation in our new structure of government. Ensure that not only do we do things differently, which is why we voted for charter reform, but to do it from a genuine community and human-centered framework.
Amazing. Thank you. Chris.
Yeah, hi again. My name is Chris Olson, and I'm running for Portland City Council District 2. And I entered this race as an outsider. I've entered this race running because I know what the needs of everyday Portlanders are. You know, I've been hearing about all these wonderful people today, and I appreciate their perspectives, and I know that we can all learn from each other. But I have the experience of what it means to be living here in the city as an everyday Portlander. I've been a renter all of my adult life, so I understand the struggle that it could be to make ends meet and how it feels like you can't get ahead in this economy. So if you want someone who will be ready on day one to represent and fight for the interests of renters, to hold PPP accountable, to house as many people as we can, I'm the person that you should vote for. And you can check out my website to learn more about my plan at olsonforpdx.com.
Thank you, Chris. And again, all of you, I appreciate every single one of you taking time out of your day to help me make your voices be heard. And thank you so much. And I hope to be able to do this again in the next election. So what, a couple of years down the road? What are the terms?
We're four. That's what I thought. We get a solid four.
Yeah.
Cool. Right on.
Yeah, so it's District 3 and District 4 that have 2-year terms this time.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that,
I think next time
that was actually determined because those are the two districts that have the lowest voter turnout. And so they wanted those two districts to be in presidential election years.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. I'm going to sign off now from KBOO Community Radio and PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Go vote. Go vote.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Have an old car taking up space? Donate it to KBOO. Your unused vehicle can become music to our ears, powering independent radio that amplifies diverse voices and community perspectives. It's easy and hassle-free. Either visit KB